I'm Evan DeWald, and I am joined by Tara Lindsley, and we are the voices behind the Unpacked podcast. On the Unpacked podcast, one of the things we love to do is talk about life and storytelling, and sometimes life gets messy and vulnerable and all those things. So we have conversations with counselors, with psychologists, with industry leaders, storytellers, and just regular humans that are making a difference in the world.
Yeah, and we're just hoping to grow and reflect and heal together. So you can find our podcast anywhere you subscribe to your podcasts. New episodes come out every Thursday. Enjoy.
Make sure to like and subscribe.
See you there.
Hey, Tara.
Hey.
How are you doing this week?
Good. That was really peppy.
It was. I feel peppy.
Yeah.
Yeah, last week was a downer.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not even going to share really why, but maybe I'm not even sure why.
That's okay. We all have off weeks.
You do. You have off weeks, and last week was one of them.
Yeah. And sometimes messy.
Yeah. This week's a little bit better.
That's good.
Kind of off to a good start. It's warmer out too. It's not raining.
You know what weather update I do need every week? The temperature of this room.
Yeah, it gets a little warm in here, doesn't it?
It doesn't matter. I don't need the temperature of what you give everybody, what's happening outside. I need to know if it's a like freezing cold, I need a blanket, or if I need to like wear shorts and we're going to be sweating.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah. There's no window in here and it is a hot box.
And there's no in between.
And we can't really turn a fan on.
I know this, you know what? Podcasting, not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's not for the, this is a tough job, people. Oh man, this weekend wasn't hard work. Had some fun on Saturday. You guys came over.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Probably favorite part of the day. Well, two favorite things happened. The little man playing dingle balls with the little man. I think that's what you call it.
It's the official name.
It is?
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
It's the strangest name.
We should have everybody Google it.
We should. Google dingle balls right now for us, folks. And just on our Instagram feed, if you could just, you know, what search results came up? You just put that in there for us.
It's a yard game, just to clarify.
Yeah. Two balls with a string in the middle.
Yeah. And you throw them.
Yeah. And you kind of throw them in a erratic way when you're four. Kind of a side throw, you know, you're trying to wrap it around the pole that's crossways, but he's really throwing it more it feels like the way Kristen throws the remote to me. It's like a hatchet. It's like it could stick into you somewhere or something. So makes it an entertaining game to play with him.
Yeah, you really got to be watching.
You do.
And also, I'm pretty sure Ryan and I beat you. So I won.
Wait a second now. Okay. Are you sure?
You made me play the game and I won.
Okay, but Theo was my partner. Like, how fair is that?
He got pretty good at it. What do you mean, how fair?
I had a 4-year-old partner. Like, if you hadn't beat me, if we had beat you, now that would have been a story to tell on the podcast.
Well, also, it's your game. Shouldn't you be good at it?
I can see I'm not going to win this. All right, I'll admit defeat. You beat me.
Yeah.
All right. And no one got really hurt.
Thankfully, but we really did have to watch. You had to keep your eyes open.
Including him, because the amount of times that little ball swung around and I thought I was going to, you know, hit him right in the face or
take out some teeth
somewhere else that might hurt. You know, I'm just saying it looks scary to me over there. And then Josh got, you know, last week we talked about the scooter rental thing. Mm-hmm. Josh got, he managed to rent a flock.
A flock, his dream.
A flock of scooters. And so we went out scooting.
I like that.
Matt and Josh and I. And it was fun. I was the only one that didn't wipe out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What level of wipeouts are we talking here?
You know, there was no injuries to report.
Okay. Not an ad for this company,
no,
clearly.
Not an ad. But definitely someone hit the pavement.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, he was driving a little bit on the pea gravel there. There was, you know, it feels still like they haven't cleaned all the streets properly.
Right. Yeah.
Anyways, hit a little bit of pea gravel. He tried to pull off a little side skid and, bit of a yard sale.
Oh.
Anyways, it was pretty fun. He didn't get hurt, so we had a good laugh, and then somebody else wiped out on the grass. But it was pretty fun. Anyways, oh, before we introduce our guest, something happened around here at the DeWald.
What?
Homestead.
Homestead.
Today, yeah. We're in the middle of town. In a lot of ways, we're in the middle of town.
Yeah.
But occasionally wildlife wanders through here. This morning, I had to run Otto out to his school function and grab the screen door to open the screen door. And little dog's standing next to me. And I go to push the door open. There's something there. And it's a skunk on my porch.
Oh my God. It's like right there. You touched it.
I was like, and you know, everybody, you know, Chris is sleeping. I was like, holy smoke. And Otto's like, what is it? What is it? I was like, it's a skunk. There's a skunk on the front porch.
Oh, no. What do you do?
So I immediately, Otto was like, I want to go outside. You know, and I was like, well, I don't want him making home here. Well, I'd kind of scared him off the step. So then he starts digging. He's like in our flower bed in the front. And like, you can get on, if he digs there, you can get underneath of our porch, which I did not want to happen. So I just went running out the front door screaming, scared him away.
That's what you did? That's the strategy?
Yeah, I literally was like waving my arms like, ah! He runs along the side of our house and gets kind of trapped in between where the, you know, our dog, little dog fence is and then the chain link fence of our lot. Yeah. And there was nowhere for him to go. So I'm in my flip-flops. And I don't want to run close to him.
Yeah, yeah.
So I go running all the way around the house to the other side and just come running around. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning. So and it's literally me running around the backyard. He took off into the neighbor's yard. So
good.
And then little Pepper shows up, you know.
Oh, and then she barks.
Yeah. Then suddenly she's brave. Like after the danger is over. Then she wants to bark.
I mean, to be fair, she's much smaller than a skunk.
Oh, she's way smaller than a skunk. I'm not sure how she would fare.
Probably not well.
Not too well.
So good thing she's brave later.
Brave later. Anyways, it was an exciting morning then.
What a way to start your day.
Yeah.
I'm grateful you didn't get sprayed because this would have been a long afternoon.
It was kind of funny. It was like, it was definitely the perfect, you know, when everybody's like, nobody move, nobody panic. It was like, now is the perfect time to panic. Always entertaining around here. Always something going on.
Always something going on.
Yeah.
You know what we're doing tomorrow night?
Oh.
We have another networking event.
We're going networking. We're doing the laundry.
Local laundry.
It's going to be fun.
I think it's going
to
be great.
I don't really know anything about it other than I have to have 20 seconds to say something about Recess Creek.
Yeah.
So I actually did prepare something. Do you want to hear it? For our listeners, this is typical. I'm like, okay, Tara, I've been working on something. So what do you think of this? So here's what I say. I say, hello, my name is Evan Wald, and I'm working under the company named Recess Creek Coaching. I do personal and corporate coaching growth. Okay. In other words, I work with individuals and leaders and organizations to help them understand themselves, their employees, and their clients.
Time's up.
Was that it? God damn. I didn't even get to the Enneagram part. Okay, for our listeners, I'll finish. I use a tool called the Enneagram, which is a personality typing system that helps people make observations of themselves in all contexts of life. And it's been my experience over 30 years that when people do this work and they pay attention to their own core motivations, they create healthier and more cohesive work environments.
Whoa, you did the speaker thing where you slow down.
To the important part.
Yeah, that's a good commercial. We'll have to tighten it up.
Okay.
A
little too wordy, eh?
Yeah, but it's got all the right elements.
You don't think if I just say it faster? I'm sure it'd be memorable. Tara, this was the other thing that's super exciting that happened I haven't told you.
What?
I received my first deposit from the money I made from the book this morning.
Oh!
Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Drum roll. $11.47.
$11?
Right.
What are you going to do with your 11 big ones?
I'm not sure. I can't even go to get a Happy Meal yet out of that. It's like $14. I can't even buy that yet.
Well, listen, we're not complaining, though, because people are supporting you.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing. And also, when we do our ads on our podcasts that people have to listen to, I win in terms of the notification I got last week, which was 1 cent.
1 cent.
1 cent. They sent me an email for that and I was like, I don't think I needed to know 1 cent. I prefer when it tells me a couple dollars.
Yeah, they really shouldn't tell you when you make 1 cent.
I don't think so either. It's not helpful. Anyways.
But you can get unpacked merch now.
That's right.
You could get yourself a shoulder to shoulder mug or some other unpacked stuff. I definitely think people need to get t-shirts with our faces on them.
I think so too.
No, you can do that at unpackedpod.ca too.
Mm-hmm.
Order stickers and mugs and all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, pins and everything. A bunch of stuff is for shoulder to shoulder, like you said. And then a few just like unpack things that we'll keep adding. And it does support us, which we're so grateful for. Even though we laughed about the book, it still is like,
yeah,
people are supporting and that's really important and growing. And
oh, I do know that more people bought the book.
But you got your first deposit.
Just got my first deposit. So it probably was It probably was the book you ordered as the sample book. That's the money from that. I will say this, though. Super excited about this next guest that's coming on. But I did listen to Shoulder to Shoulders episode that came out yesterday, which was Joelle's story.
Yeah.
I cried.
I know, me too.
But man, the story, just a, oh man, I love story. Just a beautiful, beautiful story and episode and a lot of heartache and
yeah, pain. It's coming out, right?
You know, it's coming out as he was sharing his story. And that's why we do the podcast. That's why we're doing Shoulder to Shoulder. We want people to see the human side of the LGBTQ plus inclusion conversation. But I'm super pumped about that whole series. So anyways, today, who's on today?
Kieran.
Kieran is on. Middle fingers up. And she's got her new podcast that she's working on. And I'm looking forward to, we're going to be on hers. And she's going to come on ours. And this is just a really authentic lady.
Oh, she's doing such incredible work on her podcast. And in her lifetime, she's worked really hard to care for people.
Such a natural conversation with her. It was just very natural. It didn't feel forced or anything. Like when she was on ours and when we were on hers.
Yeah. And so open about growing up like as an Indian woman and how like that felt being a part of her culture. And then also growing up in BC and being surrounded by like white people and trying to figure out like, where did she fit?
Yeah, what does that look like? And now she's in a mixed race relationship. Anyways, hey, I hope you enjoy this episode and make sure you like, subscribe, share, and do all those kinds of things. And hey, stay tuned afterwards for our little commercial. Enjoy. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Extremely nervous.
Oh. You know, we've been on a few podcasts and it is not fun to be on the other end.
Well, it's like therapy. It's nice to experience the other side to know what one may be going through. And so I felt like I had a hunch when people would walk in and be nervous, but I'm way more nervous today than I would be if I was recording. Cause I, you know, like you guys are in charge today.
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be fine. We love to have a good time and just have a good conversation. So, okay. I think this is going to be a fun day today.
Yeah.
We've got on the line another podcaster. So like a professional talker, which is going to be really awesome. Middle Fingers Up podcast, MFU. And a local to Calgary with us, kind of here. We're all kind of in the same kind of sphere. It's Kieran McKay. And we are going to talk all things podcasting, story, life. And I'm actually just as a warning shot, I got to find out what story came around naming this podcast. Well, we'll get to that in a second, okay? One of the things that we do on Unpacked all of the time is we just love to hear story. We just think this story is the context for like all life, all growth, all things. Mm-hmm. And we also are, I wouldn't say we're pretty big fans, but we actually pretty big believers that stories get messy. Mm-hmm. Things get messy. And it is kind of in those spaces and places where we grow, where we experience life, connection, all of the other things in between. So, but as we kind of get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like if you were on a sports card, what picture would be on the front and what stats about you would be on the back?
First of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me on. I was very honored and very blown away when Tara sent me an email, and because I'm so far behind you guys. I just started out. I'm just figuring this out. So to be given the opportunity to come on and talk with others is like something I was kind of hoping would happen at some point. But you know, you don't want to like put that out there because I'm a nobody. So I just really appreciate that you guys took the time and asked me to come on. So I'm very honored to be on here today. So thank you. So the sports card, I think I love the picture side because I love pictures and I love taking pictures. So I would probably wear like an inappropriate, very short, like sleazy, sporty jersey booty outfit. So I would do that. And probably the Canucks colors, like blue and green, because I am from BC. So I am a Canuck girl. So some blue and green in there. I know I'm not, I'm the blue. I'm not what it is, the Bloods and the Crips, right? So I don't know what Calgary would be, right? But I know you guys are like, end the interview. Some stats on the other side. So I'm South Asian. I am born in June. So I'm a Gemini. My birthday's in a week. So I'll be 42 this year. I have a couple of children, two boys. I'm happily married to, I'm in an interracial relationship. So I've been with my husband for over 22 years. I don't know if I'd have any like hat trick. I think that's kind of, maybe we'll figure some out along the way. Maybe it's
okay. That's awesome.
I love
that's
it.
Awesome. So you came from BC, which I don't hold that against you. Maybe the Canucks thing, but the rest, I don't, you know, BC is pretty cool, yeah, other than the Canucks. When did you come out West, and what brought you out West?
Yeah. So, Carrie, my husband and I were dating, 20 years ago we came out. So it was just like that big boom. He had a job opportunity and we were together for a couple of years. So it was kind of like, do you want to come along? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll come along. I always thought I'd move back because my whole family's out in BC, my friends and sort of my whole community was out there. So it was a little isolating out here. So we always thought we'd move back. But I think once we had our oldest son, who's almost 12, you kind of feel like this is their home. So this is now our home. I can't trash talk their home anymore. So I think that sort of settled my restlessness. And so I'm happy to be in Calgary.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally hear you. So your family is still out in Vancouver. What was life like? Where did you grow up in Vancouver? Like, it was Vancouver, did you say?
No. Okay. So I love that you say that because that's a thing for those of us that are embarrassed to be, that were embarrassed to be parts of the lower mainland. When you travel, you'd be like, oh, I'm from Vancouver. And then it wasn't until like my 30s where I was like, okay, you know what? I have to be honest. I have to be proud. I have to admit I'm from Surrey.
I was just going to say Surrey.
You were going to guess?
The ghetto.
Yeah, always. Well, and you, when you're South Asian, you could go any part of the world. I remember being in India and in a bazaar with this man trying to buy something. I don't know what it was. And I remember him knowing that I'm not from India, but saying, are you from Surrey? And I was like, man, like, what, how do you just know that of all the places it's Surrey? But yeah. So born and raised for the first, 11, 12 years in Richmond, actually. I always say the whole village term is really literal because my first 5 years, all my aunts and uncles and grandparents, we all lived on the same block in Richmond. And so we all grew up, my cousins, and lots of family time together. And so lots of good memories in those first few years. And then my parents sort of moved somewhere else, but we still had some of the family living in the home with us. So we always had our village around us. And then my parents decided to go against everyone and move to Surrey, which was like this controversy back in the day.
So tell us a little bit about that. Like, what was it like? So controversial move.
Yeah. Like a lot of aunts and uncles, the elders, I think were, what are you doing? Like, economically it didn't make sense. And I just remember being 12 and my parents sort of making this big decision on their own because we made a lot of decisions as families together. And so I still don't know why, for whatever reason, they felt Surrey. And I don't know if we felt like we could afford it better. We always laugh, like a lot of the South Asian community can come off like there's a lot of money. But we were like the poor brown family. I always joke about like not the rich ones. So my parents had to work strategically, I think, or when we were growing up. And so Surrey seemed to be the place to sort of get out of there. But it was the first time in my life that I didn't have it was just the five of us, my two siblings, my parents and I in a home. And we had this whole community and our whole family. And so it's funny because my sister and I were talking about this. It was kind of like a culture shock, almost like this extreme isolation. We didn't know anyone. And like all the people in our community where I lived in Surrey was like all white people. And so I went to elementary school, met a couple of the brown girls and sort of became friends. But thankfully our best friends, my sister and I always tell the story, they live like our backyards were sort of touching. So their dad built us a ladder to climb over and back. And they were the best, honestly, family that helped us integrate, learn a lot of different customs that are outside of. So I always say I born and raised in Canada, but I grew up in India. Like my English isn't even that great. And I went to university here because I grew up with immigrant family members. Right. And so these friends, their parents were great. They were so kind and like really made an effort to get to know my family and I.
So was this neighborhood family across the fence Indian as well?
No, they're a white family. So they were like our first, you know, because I grew up around in Richmond, there was Asian kids, white kids, brown kids. But you did feel outside of your own community because, again, I was around my cousins all the time. So out here, Kim and Michelle, our best friends, their parents were so cool. They were a white family. My sister and I, like, we ate macaroni and cheese for the first time. we had a sleepover that was outside of our family members. Like, just things that a lot of North American kids may grow up with. And certainly the friends around us did. And so being of a minority, we just didn't have those kinds of experiences. So we always, my sister and I, we always wanted to be part of the Western culture. And it's not like my parents kept us away from, they just didn't, they didn't know, right? Like they're holding on to our customs and trying to figure out how to raise these girls. And then my brother came years and years later, but to sort of raise these girls in a Western culture. So there's always this clash between the Western, like the North American and the South Asian sort of culture.
Yeah. You know, you're pointing out some of this, like, mm-hmm. obviously pretty white over here on this side of the yeah. screen. And I think that, you know, I've had an opportunity to travel to a bunch of different places and experience a bunch of different cultures. But one of the things that I always took for granted was that everybody around me was experiencing the same childhood or the same upraising as I got. And it isn't true. And still I'm 49, and that's a predominant thing where you just go, well, of course, that's just really normal.
No. And it's funny because our boys, right, they're mixed and I'm first generation, they're second. So they're growing up very different. And I have to remind them when they want to have these sleepovers and all these sorts of things, like, this is a privilege and this is different than how I grew up. So when I ask certain questions or make certain safety plans, it comes from this place. And because they're sort of getting, you know, best of both cultures, I would say. And so they're also figuring, like, Mom, why are you always on us about that? It's like, well, because in my house, Nanny would not have allowed that, right? And so they're like, okay, whatever, you know. So it's funny, yeah, like the things that you grow up with versus, you know, or you think that are just part of your life.
Well, and they create a context for how you see the world mm-hmm. too, right? Like, it just mm-hmm. In other interactions too, not just sleepovers, but in all of these other interactions, it's like that's been, like, even we were talking about before we press record, that's been a little bit of what this workbook that I've been writing has been about, is like, well, how do we look back to kind of see how our story has kind of created our perspective on the world and how we see it? Mm-hmm. And it's part of the reason why it's one of our first questions, even on every podcast, is to kind of go, well, how does your childhood influence the way you see the world now? It is kind of an important thing. What's it been like for you then? So here you are. So you end up moving out to Alberta. So you've made references. So you're in a mixed race relationship. Was that hard? Was that easy for your family? Like, even for your parents, was that easy for them to accept that she's dating some white guy. Now she's moving.
Yeah, this damn white guy's taking our daughter away. Yeah, like, it's a really good question, because that's sometimes you forget memories and all sorts of things happen in life. But those are experiences that I will always remember, because my parents, like, I think immigrant parents, like, first of all, are doing the best they can. And I always preface that on the show, like, I'm just learning my life now that I've understood that I'm a child of immigrant parents. And I'm understanding now my parents' perception and what they thought was happening when I, you know, they thought they were parenting me. I thought it was neglect or whatnot. And even though I understand their story, it's a relief to know that my feelings and my experiences still did happen for me. And so I always like to start with that, because I think sometimes it's easy to get sucked into or making it seem like, you know, my parents are these horrible people. And that's, like, far from what I'm trying to say. But accepting someone that's not part of our culture is difficult for a lot of people in minority cultures. And I know for my parents, it was just fear and the unknown. And a lot of our community is built off of what other community members will say or do. And you're competing for your community member status, but you're also competing with the North American culture. So you're just not winning. And so my aunt sort of broke kind of, like I say, kind of broke the ice when she brought home my uncle at the time. He was Danish. And that was like a huge ordeal. I remember being a teenager and my dad struggling with this because my mom's sister was quite a bit younger. And so years pass and you see your parents grow. And so when I brought Carrie home, I told them pretty quick into dating. Cause I was like, you know what? I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't like, you kind of grow up having to lie a lot. Meet me down the street, telling, you know, making stories with your parents about a friend's house you're going to, so you can have a little bit of freedom for a few hours. So yeah, I think they at first, weren't sure how to take it, but my husband told this story at our wedding. My dad, the first time he met Carrie, said, come out to the car and come grab groceries with me. So Carrie went to the car, went to grab groceries, and he sees a field hockey stick in the back of the trunk. And he's like, oh, what's this, to my dad? And my dad grabs it. And my dad is like, this is for you if you like mess with my daughter. And Carrie was like, what? But it was just like, it was just a really cute little joke, because if you get to know my dad, he looks like this big scary man, but he's like so far from it. And they just, my parents accepted him really quick because my husband made such an effort to get to know my culture. And my parents always say he brought me closer to my culture, because I used to run from being Indian, right? Like I wanted to be a white girl. So I didn't want to be, I hated all the wrong things about my culture, I guess. So they were really, really open. They loved him. He made such an effort. But the move was, you know, my dad pulled me aside and basically said, go do your thing. And always know you'll have a place here if you need to come back. And I it was like a lot of freedom. So I had a lot of support moving out here.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting that you brought this up, because I actually, when I was listening to one of your episodes from your podcast, I was like, oh, I think we should ask her this question about like what did the relationship with her own culture look like? So I think you had said something about
that you wanted, like you didn't want to be Indian.
Yeah, that you didn't want to be Indian.
Yeah, I had a white girl complex.
Oh, that's what you said. A white girl complex. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, you know, like media, like I always say to my friends, we all have identity issues, right? Like, doesn't matter if you're male, female, what gender you are. We all biologically at a certain age, usually around 13, 14, start to question who we are and all that. And then I think the added piece for like a visible minority is nobody looks like you. So you're really striving hard to fit in, and your friends are too, but like, they look like the girls on the magazines. They kind of look like the models on TV. You're nothing like that. You don't grow up with that. So you, for me, and I didn't lean into it. I sort of ran from it, and, you know, I wanted to be white and everything about me. I was, you know, my friends used to call me Brown Barbie in high school. It was like, I used to hide behind my white friends. And honestly, for years, because I met Carrie when I was 20. And so I've sort of been with him longer than not, now that, you know, it's interesting in that sense. And I, where we're at in this part of the relationship is sort of at a place of, I'm with you now because I know who I am. And I think for years prior, I was with him because I thought in order to be seen or heard in our society, I had to be with this white guy. So I would look like I'm legit. I fit in. It's so weird. It's like, as my kids would say, it's so cringe, but yeah, like I have a lot of guilt for hiding behind my white friends, my white family, my, you know, for years. And it's just really just recently where I'm like, okay, I gotta, you know, you hit your 40s and you start to.
Sooner or later, you gotta live. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And you're like, and you know, it's funny, we made a joke earlier about choice. Like, I think I have a choice in every situation. It may not be the right choice, but nobody did that to me. Nobody did a bad thing. It was, that's how I took in that racism, sort of that pressure. That's how I conceptualized it. And now I'm in a place where I'm not mad at anyone. I'm just like, I'm happy to be South Asian, and I got to go. And it's a lot of conversations with your younger little Kieran, going back and letting her know, like, you're good, man. Your mom's around. My mom used to say, because I'm also the darkest one, my whole family. So that's the other thing. So all my cousins and my siblings are super light. And in my culture, they don't want you to be with a white person, but man, they love it when you look like a white person. Yeah. So when you're Indian and you're light skinned, it's like a big deal. And I was always the opposite. So my cousins and my uncle, they used to make fun of me, and I was sensitive to it as a kid. And I'd grow up wearing sweatshirts and hats in the summer because I didn't want to tan. But I remember my mom one day, I was like overheating, so hot, so dramatic. And she's like, you know, white people pay to get tanned, Kieran. And I was like, what? She's like, white people pay to get darker. And I was like, what? I don't understand. She's like, so I'm just saying, like, if people want your skin color, so what are you going to do? Like, just own your skin. And I was like, oh, what? And then she's like, one day some white guy is going to fall in love with you for your skin. I'm like, that's dumb. Like, no Bollywood movie has that storyline. Okay, mom.
That is so true. So why the guilt around it now?
I think I feel really bad that I let myself down sometimes. I could have leaned into it. I think I had a lot more to say and give growing up, and I allowed myself to go into that box of not having a voice, and I made up for it and being loud and all the wrong, like different other ways of just, you know, having attitudes, sass and all these things. And I think I feel bad because I missed out on things that I wanted to be part of. Like I can't be part of now, some conversations with grandparents, being part of some cultural customs, that sort of thing. And so I'm also raising kids that are half Indian. So I have to like go work through some of that stuff to also understand, like I don't want them to miss out on our culture, and there's lots of things I can't do. Right. So I'm just trying to like find my way back to that.
Okay. So one other question I was going to ask. So when you were a kid, was there an incident or a story that caused you to see, oh no, I have to hide behind my white friends?
Yeah, like a lot of times, you know, like, you know, kids bully, right? Kids do all sorts of things. So I'm mindful of that too. But yeah, there was lots of kids growing up. So here's the thing, like I got bullied by my own culture because I was running from being Indian. So it wasn't like the other brown kids. I didn't dress like them. I didn't listen to their music. So they thought I was a misfit in that group. And then I'm like trying to fit in with the white kids, and they're great. They're nice, but I'm not like, I can't go out. I can't do some of the things that they do. So there was always that clash. Like it's always been adults that have said things or created an energy where they didn't really need to say it. And you know, I know, because it's happened enough that this is because of my color. So there's a lot of that. And, you know, I was talking to a friend recently, and he's like, you know what? We didn't even have it as bad as our parents. So he was like, we got to talk about this, but like, how do we complain about it when our parents, like they went through some serious stuff in comparison to what we did. Right. So then you always like, you know, you're like, you're right. Like was it that bad? I guess it wasn't, but as an adult woman, I've had way more experiences that I can remember, where, yeah, people just didn't, people weren't into, especially being in Calgary, to be honest, like Calgary, coming from Surrey, where streets are named in my language, and there's racism, but like a lot of the white kids really love the Indian culture. And because it was, you know, every white kid had like six brown friends. So you're eating the food and you're all part of it. And so you kind of grow up together. And then when you come here and draw in workplaces, at events, you start to learn, oh, I can't wear my Indian clothes at a party here. It's not looked at in the same way. Somebody asked why I was wearing a butterfly costume one time at a work party, and I was wearing an Indian outfit.
Oh man.
Yeah. You know, like somebody called the cops on my husband because we were doing like an Indian night and wearing like clothes, and my husband was wearing his wedding attire, and he was going outside to walk a friend to the car, and some neighbors said there was like some clown running around in a clown costume, and the cops came and were like, this is sad. So yeah. And then like, you know, there's been lots of events where in places where people have encouraged me to not want to talk. And I don't know, I kind of like am at a place of, I'm not angry. I just like, I'm going to do me. So I will talk. I can only change the course in my house. Right. So it's no longer like, it doesn't bother me in the same way now in the way that it used to. Now it's, that person mistreating me is another reminder of how how I can work different in my home with my own kids and my own family. But I think the problem is that a lot of people that aren't of color are having bigger reactions today because more of us are willing to talk. And so that's always my reminder is like, I get you're upset, but you have to understand, like, we've been told for all these years and generations, like, we can't say anything. And now we're saying stuff. And we just have to figure out how to communicate in a way that everyone feels like they can, you know, have a voice. So that's the whole point of that show is like, let's just talk about things without worrying about offending each other.
Yeah. And you definitely are accomplishing that on your show. For sure. Like the episode I listened to and just even what I've been observing, mm-hmm. it's like, you definitely are doing that. What is the story behind the podcast and the name of the podcast and some of the, like obviously it's a name to, you know, it's a name that catches your attention.
For sure. So does the logo.
And so does the logo. Yeah. We're assuming that there is a story that's there.
I appreciate that question. Thank you. Okay. So Middle Fingers Up is... The show was going to be called The Buffer, and it was going to be called The Buffer because I felt like I live in gaps. I feel like there's a lot of opportunities in gaps. I grew up in gaps. So I'm like, oh, let's find opportunities. So I thought The Buffer was going to be this bridge to build a bridge for mental health and visible minorities and anyone in particular, but I only know me. So I know I could give something to my community. And if others were interested, please come along. But I just thought nobody is going to listen from the South Asian community. No one is going to listen to a podcast about mental health and like hard stories that a lot of us are taught to not talk about if I don't have something that's in your face. And I need people to kind of understand that this is a big deal. So let's do it. So I was like, well, I'm known for always giving my middle finger to people. And it's usually in good fun. Like I usually walk in a room and my kids are 12 and 9 and they are doing that. It's just my thing. And, and I thought, oh, middle fingers up to the stigma. Like, why don't we do that? And the reason why we started it was like 2019, I went to the National, which is a very well-known establishment out here. There's a lot of locations. And my sister and I were denied service because the bartender told us to our face that he wasn't going to serve us because of our color and because our people don't tip. And so it was like kind of a disheartening moment. And I happened to be there with my brother, who's 10 years younger, his future wife at the time, and all their friends. And they all responded to that in such a way that was even more disheartening, which was like, okay, well, let's go to the next place. And my sister and I were beside ourselves. And so I thought, no, like, this isn't good. We're just so immune to this. We're not saying anything and we can't blame people. I can't blame that kid that's telling me that when we're not doing anything about it. And, you know, so I reached out to the National and said, listen, I work in mental health. Clearly there's some work that needs to happen here. And that night, somebody in their staffing group had also taken their life. So obviously there was something going on with that bar. And so I just said to them, like, I don't want this kid fired. I don't care about that. Like, he's one of many. Like, you guys are well known. Let's work together. Let's like, this is a good opportunity to do something. And They didn't want to do anything. They took a phone call with me. They didn't initiate anything. They said that they would, they never did. And I'm not calling you back. Like, I put myself out there. I'm not going to do that. Right. Like, so I just kind of shut down and we had a lot of hard things happen. I used to work in not-for-profit. So it's COVID. We had a staff member that was murdered by a client. So there was a lot of stuff going on. I kind of just lost my light for a bit. And that incident just made me think, you know, there's nothing, I shouldn't talk. Like, what's the point? And then, I don't know, I just like in last year, my husband and I lost a really dear friend who's our age group, has two kids. It was very sudden. And he used to always say, the grass is greener where you water it. And I don't know, I just kept thinking about him and thought, I need to like quit my job of 18 years. I need to give my family more time and I need to do something that I'm going to go fail at because I'm really good at this job. And so I resigned. It was kind of a shock for me, for my colleagues, for everybody. And so it's like literally been a year. And so I thought, okay, well, if I'm going to do it. And then my sister-in-law was a big part. She was like, you need to do this. And so I did it.
I love that. If you don't mind me asking, what was it that you were doing?
So I was at this well-known not-for-profit here in Calgary for almost 18 years and started out frontline and ended in leadership. And I was running short-term crisis and trauma mental health programs. So we had a partnership with AHS. The clients would come to my programs. They'd stay there for a short period of time. We do a lot of wraparound work with the family and the young people and provide some aftercare, like in-home support. That's one part of this organization, and that was sort of my area.
Okay, wow. Mm. It's kind of an interesting thing, like just what came to mind even while you were talking too, is that it's an interesting thing when we work in a profession of people care, let's just say people care in general. And we often will ask, we've had a lot of counselors and other people who are in people care. And was like, how did you take care of yourself in that time? What was that like? And thing else that also happens to people who are in people care, and that is that their own stories at times come crashing in on them.
Yeah.
For you, is that what happened? Is that part of kind of what happened? How did you care for yourself in the middle of, some of those things?
Yeah, I definitely feel there's elements to what you're saying that are resonating. And I'm like, yeah, for sure. Cause I think self-care is a load of crap. I always tell staff, I'm like, I hate that word. Don't bring it up. There's no such thing. Like bubble baths don't mean anything. They're fun. They're exciting, but you have to do a lot of intentional, purposeful work to figure out who you are and how your own triggers aren't what's happening for your clients. So you're holding a lot of space for people. And I thought I was good at it because I was the oldest child. My parents relied on me a lot. I grew up like I was a weird kid. I never had toys. I was always thinking I'm an adult. And so I like being a leader. I like being a caretaker. But what I wasn't good at was recognizing everything else outside. Like my identity was my job. And so I my husband sort of ran the household and with the kids and stuff. So I think where the self-compassion started to wear thin, or you start asking yourself, like, where is the answer to the question I just asked a client? I think, those blinders were up because there was a lot of signs coming from my family and what. And, when I finally resigned, I'll tell you that this is where I learned, oh, shoot, I should have done this long time ago, is when I finally resigned and I told my mom and dad and my siblings, they all in their own way told me, I guess the best way I can describe it is, when you're dating someone that maybe is abusive and not the favorite partner that comes to Thanksgiving dinner, but your family puts up with them. And then when you break up, they're like, oh, I hated that guy or that person. So I started to hear a lot of this of, oh, your work. Every time you were on vacation, you were working. Every time we saw you, you were working. You're working. I'm so glad you quit. And so you're like, oh, you think you're running this show and you're doing all these things lovely and everyone's sort of trying to be kind to you and you're not recognizing it. And yeah, you have this aha moment. You realize, oh God, I there's more to life than this job. Don't ever want to talk poorly about my workplace because they did teach me a lot. I was there for those many years for a reason, but I definitely think when you're, especially not for profit, you're doing six people's job. It's a lot going on. Morale's always bad. You're the leader. There's all these things happening. And yeah, like, where do you store that? Right. There's somewhere in your body. You're storing it. You think you're dealing with a bubble bath. I had a bubble bath. I'm fine. But the holding space for people is hard. And you guys would know that when you're interviewing and you're asking these questions. Like, I think it's part of why I left that job was that constant holding that space. And where do you put that? How do you, stretch those arms that are so tired, but it's different this way because it's on my terms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did you discover your voice again after the incident in 2019? Cause you said you weren't quite sure, but it sounded like it took a little while.
It did. I think I had some heart to hearts in my own house because one of the hard parts of that incident was I was holding my phone up that night to the manager because I wanted him to know that this wasn't okay. And he didn't really know what to do. He was doing the best he could. And he offered to give us, you know, free drinks and a meal. And I said, you know, like, I appreciate that, but like, I'm not complaining about my food being cold. Like, somebody told me I can't have a drink because I'm a different color than everyone else. Like, that's, there's a little more depth to that. And he was doing the best he could. And I pulled my phone out and my husband is on my picture on my screen. So I was like, look, but I'm married to a white guy. So obviously, you know, like, I'm different. And I think that night I was very beside myself when I got home. And then the next couple of nights I was like very emotional. My sister and I didn't actually talk about it for almost a year because we were just like, we have a lot of emotions. And so eventually, like, the inner dialogue was just, oh, okay. So this isn't really anyone all these years that's kept my voice. Like, no one's taken my voice from me. I've had shitty things happen, but I have to decide how I want it back. So I think as the work year started to, you know, as we talked about, it was a little like, I started looking at work different. I was like, I think I need to leave here. That was part of finding my voice, starting to think about things I can do on my terms and do things for me. And it's been a long time. I think sometimes for women, it can be hard because we're taught to shh and do whatever you need to. And then, yeah, when you're working for folks, right, you have to follow people's rules and stuff. So I did just a lot of reflecting, a lot of thinking and reflecting, and just started to think about, okay, let's do this. Like, I can hide. I'm raising two boys that are half white. So like, what message do I want to send them? And so when you start to dial down the noise of everyone else, I think you start to recognize that, I don't know, these other things that are a little more important. And so it's like, who cares what people have to think? That's kind of where I'm at now. I don't care what anyone thinks about what I have to say. But what I care about is, as long as I'm doing it in a way that's not being harmful to people, like, that's what I care about. But if you don't like it, that's okay. You do you. Like, I'm okay with that. You know, you start to figure that out. And I have a really great husband who had to also grow and change, because how we used to talk about things prior to that event, and then afterwards, he's had to sort of look at his inner dialogue, his external dialogue, his script, his jokes, the messages. And so what he's been doing a lot for me lately is, when I do talk about these things, he holds a space and he doesn't say anything. And that's all I can ask. I'm not asking you to fix it. I'm not asking you to tell me, you know, that sucks. I'm not asking you to say, does it really happen that way? Or really someone said that to you? I'm not asking you to say any of that stuff. I'm just asking, can I say this?
Yeah.
And I'll take care of it. Can I just say it out there? So he's been really helpful with that.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. When I take on a client to do growth and transformation work, I'll often tell them, look, what we're going to do first is name where you are, and that we're going to be leaving where you are to go to a different place. And in growth and transformation, you can't always name the place you're going to. So there's a mystery to it. Mm-hmm. And you're entering into this space, and in architectural terms, they would call it liminal space. It's like the space between where you were and where you're going. And there is a lot of unknowns to liminal space. And the entering into liminal space gives you a different perspective of the place that you were. That's what I just heard you describing. And the language and the context of the conversations that you talked about, and even how you fit, how you belonged, how, you know, what was the language you, like, actual language you used, but also what were the underlying, you know, narratives that you've been telling yourself your whole life. And so when we have these kinds of moments, like you just described, and I'll often tell my clients, okay, look, you have to learn to be compassionate to yourself and the things that you used to believe and all of the narratives that you used to hear in your story. But you also need to be very aware that you're changing the game on your loved ones. That they speak to you is about to change. The way that you respond to them is about to change. Everything. In your case, right? Your job is about to change. All of those things are about to change. And for sure, at least the very beginning part of that kind of growth journey like that, it's unsettling. It's unsettling for you, as I'm sure it was very unsettling for you as the person, but it's unsettling for your spouse. It's unsettling for your kids. And
Totally.
Being able to articulate it is a huge deal. Like to be able to say like, yeah, something's going on with me. And even I don't know what it is yet. So that's what I heard you just describing was like, yeah, I have this inciting incident that takes place in my life. It happens to be in, you know, at the National. But even what you just described is, I hope you're, when you look back at it, you see it with some real compassion, because it's like, to not decide to do something major about it for a year requires, it shows a great deal of restraint, wisdom, like all of those things are present there to be able to go, no, I got to slow this down. It is tragic to know that that kind of thing is still happening in our city. I am certain that some of our listeners will not like hearing it. And maybe that's a good tension to be in.
Yeah.
Right? To,
yeah.
You know, I think sometimes we just shouldn't like some of the things we hear. Yeah. We shouldn't like it.
Yeah, it should challenge us.
Right? Yeah. Like if it rubs us the wrong way, I think. And I think I really like how you shared that, because what you're saying and how I'm taking it is transitions. Like you're talking about the hallways. I'm like, yeah, transitional space, right? Like it's these transitions we go through, and often we just try to get through that hallway to get to the bathroom, but taking a moment and recognizing that, you know, we're walking through this and this is what I'm leaving. And I don't really know what the bathroom's going to look like or the place that I'm going to next. And I think that for me is so great to be part of, because I feel like I'm finally part of this cool kids club where it's the people that are working on themselves and self-awareness. And so when you take those blinders off, you start to really appreciate a lot of people around you, and even the nasty people around you. You're like, oh, okay, this is great. This is meaning whatever to me, and I'll do what I will with it. But I feel like you have a lot of freedom when you recognize those little spaces in between of, yeah, how am I going to walk away from this, and what am I going to do? And I appreciate that you shared that.
Yeah. It's just one of those kind of things where we all are in those spaces at different times. And then the reality is too, like sometimes we choose to enter into a, you know, a transitional space or a liminal space, and sometimes it's chosen for us.
Totally. Yeah.
And I would say this too, that it's like I have walked with people through grief and all of the things that kind of go with that. And it produces, this is not to make light of it, it produces good questions at times when we're willing to ask them. It asks us good questions about our life and our purpose and who we are and what we're about. And that's what it sounds like that's what it sounds like happened to you. And and of course, no one would want you to go through the grief of it. No one would want that.
But I think going through it, it's like you're shedding skin, right? Too. Like, I think, yeah, nobody at the time is like, gosh, let me experience this. Like you said, however, how many of us come out of something with nothing, let alone like so much, right? So you walk out of that, and I just have a lot of my friend said this. He's like, since you stopped working, you're so happy. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And so you think about that, and you think, well, yeah, maybe he's noticing that, like, I just have a lot of gratitude. I'm really, really appreciative of things that I was busy with the wrong things for years, and I just didn't have the time to appreciate the things that, I don't know, make us, I guess, get through this life. And so when you start to think of things from that perspective, I think you think, okay, like, do I really care about that guy that said that thing to me? That's really unfortunate. But the difference now is I'm going to share it. I'm going to talk about it so that maybe, like you said, it can get other people to think, oh yeah, okay, maybe I don't want to do that. Or like, you know, we talk about bystanders. We're always around when these kinds of things happen. And safely, is there a way that we can play a role for if not for some individual, for the betterment of your city, right? It's like, don't we want a better YYC? Like I would love for people to be proud to be from Calgary and say that they don't experience things like this, any kind of discrimination, right? For what your preference is, what your color is, your gender, whatever. I like, I think we're in a place where we're pushing a lot of the things that we were told we couldn't, and people are just having reactions. And I think they're entitled to have those too. We don't have to let those reactions sort of, I think, direct the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What drew you initially to doing mental health work? And then why did you want to share it in your podcast and help people, you know, become more self-aware?
I had a lot of like friends and, or sorry, family support, as I was saying, growing up. So when I couldn't go to my parents, I had an aunt, an uncle, grandpa, grandma. But sometimes we protect our loved ones. And I had some bad things happen to me. And I just couldn't sit with the fact that I had to deal with that on my own. Like I was 14. And I thought, there's got to be a way to deal with this. Like, why can't I talk about this? And so I always joke, because my guidance counselor in high school's name was Mr. Payne. And he was our academic little counselor. He had a little closet of a room. And I think he wasn't even equipped for the conversation, because he was meant to help us with academics. But he was a really good, I think, invitation to wanting to talk about your stuff. And I think from that moment on, I was like, okay, I know this is what I want. And I know there's people like me out there that feel like they can't. And, you know, you see addiction, you see a lot of domestic violence, you see a lot of abuse, you see all sorts of things growing up, and you think, is there a way to change it? And so I thought, being South Asian, being in mental health, maybe would start to open doors for our community and minorities. Like even when I worked at that organization, demographics, 97% were always Caucasian. And then the 3% was like a couple of different, you know, cultures. And so the stigma really sits heavily for a lot of community members. So it's like, I don't know, I think the more we talk, right, the less we act it out, the less, maybe less violence in the home, less addictions, all those kinds of things. So I am just always drawn to mental health. I think mental health and physical health are heavily connected. That's how I'm experiencing it. And so I just think, we don't talk about it, where's it going to go?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as you're just sharing, I think it's a huge thing that you are an Indian woman who is sharing some of these things, because we have some other friends, like Indian friends, and when I listen to her talk, and one of them in particular talk, there's a predominant message that you don't talk about like these kinds of things in the Indian culture.
And yes.
Like a real fear, actually, like even though as I ask questions, I can see that there is like, and it's not a trust thing. It's legitimately a cultural thing where it's like, no, we don't do this. What are you doing? Don't ask that question, because now you've made me uncomfortable because I'm not going to answer it.
Right. Yeah. You're too open.
Yes.
And you're a man. So that could be the other thing too, right? Like a man having a conversation with a woman, like there's so many things that it just goes back to that. Yeah. These conversations you're having, someone else may be like, whoa, we don't ever go there. Like, that's not how we talk about it. Right. And I have so much support from my parents. Like I've talked to them too and said, you know, anytime I bring my past up, this has nothing to do with you and everything to do with how I'm conceptualizing it, how I'm, you know, making sense of it. And they're just so phenomenal because they listen, they like always send me feedback. They're always like, oh my gosh, I'm learning. My dad's like, I feel like an alien in this country, in this world, because he's like, things I just didn't even know, like the topics that we're talking about. So it's nice to have that support, because I know that's not always there for a lot of other people, right, in our community.
Wow, that is a huge deal.
Yeah, they're great.
So the middle finger up thing, you do it every episode.
Yes.
You ask somebody. Do you have a fingers up for us?
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't bring one, but I have like 100,000. So yeah, yeah, sure, we can do it. I thought when I invite you on,
yes, okay.
Yeah, like, yes, well, fair. But
we can totally do one today. And maybe we should add on, like we should try something a little bit different too, like what's something that you are excited about? Like what's in front of you? We should all answer that one. What's in front of you?
Tara, you start.
Well, actually, I also work with Evan's wife, Kristen, and we were just So I have something from like just walking into this room because I was in the other room. Her and I were just talking about some new stuff. I'm working on some stuff. I do marketing in my own business as well. And I work with her. And we were just talking about putting together kind of like this event for makers and like collaborating on something to help other small business owners. So I actually am really excited to do that with her.
Yay, that's exciting.
Yeah. So it was a business thing, but we were just both really excited. It's been like a hard year. So
yeah,
it was fun to brainstorm with her and be excited together again, like we kind of used to do.
Cool.
So
use your skill sets, right? Like in a way, it probably feels good to be able to go back to that and do some of that.
Yeah, just something different that we're both excited to do and even gather people like ready to do that a little bit. So
mm-hmm. Yep. You got to fingers up.
Like probably just to like shame in general. That's usually mine. I struggle with a lot of shame. So
like mom guilt shame or all the shame?
Oh, no, like any kind of shame, basically. Yeah, like I just really, yeah, it's like really. It's wheel. Like just right at the surface all the time. But yeah, mom guilt. I have a chronic illness, so I feel a lot of shame around like not being able to do things or do it at the level that I want to do things. Or like I spent a lot of last week resting, which really pisses me off. So then I feel really bad about that, not being able to like, you know, just run my life.
I feel like you have a lot to unpack there, Tara. Let's unpack this.
Yeah, yes, why don't we?
I'm in therapy. We're good.
I've been therapy. Yeah, yeah.
I'll pass. Plus, I'm not a therapist, so I'd be a fool to let you guys think that I am. But I appreciate what you said, though, because I think shame is that, you know, sometimes you're thinking and you jot down ideas for topics. And a lot of it has to do with probably, I don't know about you, but like some of my own stuff. And I'm like, oh, I'd like to talk about this more. And that's one of the things, guilt and shame are on there, because I think it happens in so many different ways for so many of us. And it can really bog us down. And we just like have these assumptions and I got to be this way or got to do this or got to perform this way. And when things are out of our control, it's hard. It's hard to not go there. So I can appreciate where you're coming from.
So how about you? What's in front of you? And what do you, out of your list of hundreds or whatever you said earlier, what are you feeling particularly aggressive towards today?
Yeah. So like, okay. So one thing that I'm looking forward to, and then one thing I'm putting my middle fingers up to essentially is what we're saying, right?
Sure.
Okay. So I think the thing in front of me would be, well, my birthday is coming up soon. So I'm a birthday hog. I care about my birthday and often, you know, it's like a 6-month countdown. So for people that are in my life, they hate my birthday. It's like they all have a complex. So I'm really excited because I love making family members feel the pressure. So it, you know, my old colleagues are like, thank God you don't work here anymore. But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to spending some time with my family and having some birthday cake and birthday time. And then middle fingers up. I'm just going to say, like, I am so mad at Tupperware containers and lids. And I've been having this fight for the last week. Like, where I have so many containers, but I don't know where my lids are. And every day I forget to go buy new stuff because I also shouldn't have to. Where did the lids go? So I just like everyone in the household's been thinking that I'm getting a little too upset about this, but I'm like investigating, like empty out your lunch. Where's the container? Where'd you put those? Like, I cannot find them. Like, where do they go? So I've been really upset about that thing. So that I'm putting my middle fingers up to losing the lids or the container, whichever part with your, yeah.
That is super frustrating.
It is.
Okay. Yeah. So my turn.
All right, your turn.
The middle fingers up right now is towards adults who want to blame our young people for their aggressive behavior. As if it's just kids that are being aggressive and bullying and like all of those kinds of things. And we just hold them up, you know, we should just figure out this kid problem that we got going on here. It's like, yeah. So I think for me, it's just become more and more apparent that it's like our young people are actually living out the posture of the adults in their world. So to look at them and go, they have a problem. This is video games or something. It's like, no, video games aren't teaching our kids how to be that mean.
Yeah. Well, back then it was like sex, drugs, and rock and roll, yeah. Right? So blame all of that versus like education and all the other things we could do in between. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
What's in front of me? I'm hoping some trips, some travel. I'm hoping I've got some potential trips or travel that are lined up, both for my coaching business, but then also for another organization that I work a little bit for here and there.
Oh, right. There's another one now. There's like,
it's funny you were making jobs.
How many hours are in your day? Like, do you have 25 hours in a day? Like, are you even from this planet? You come through a vortex. I feel like you come in and out of a vortex. I bet you.
And some of it, like, I actually would really encourage you to more hear it more like it's like a survival technique as opposed to like...
It's something appealing.
Something appealing all the time. It's not like I like to do all the things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a year out of changing a whole lifelong career. So I got to do the things.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. Fist bump that, because I also am... That's exactly the year and groceries, and I go to my kids' school and now they know they have a mom. They're like, oh, there's a mom here, because I'm never involved in anything. None of my stuff involves making money though. So you're probably one better there, because I'm sure I probably need to get a job sometime soon. But
I love it. You know what? I hope that you can find the space that you get, that you can. To really figure out if you ever decide to join the workforce again, that you're entering back in a space that's like so much more fully you and all of the good things about you. So this has been really fun. What have we left out? Can you tell us a little bit more? Just tell us a little bit about your podcast again, just to remind our listeners, and then we'll sign off.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Thank you. Drop my plug now. So we drop on Tuesdays. So today, and episode a week, and they are conversations with professionals, with people and their life. So you know some might say their professional life, but really they're just, it's a space that I'm holding for folks so that people can share stories, we can heal through stories, talk about going visiting our inner child. And a lot of conversations that help those of us that are visible minorities, I think, make sense of how we got to where we are today, sort of what we've been talking about in this episode. What are the things that get me going? Why do I have those responses? So if anyone's interested in being curious and joining my journey of, you know, this path to self-awareness and, we know better when we can do better and be better. So I think if people are interested in that, join us, listen to us. We're on all platforms. Some people have mixed feelings about the length. They can go from an hour and a half to 2.5 hours. And that's just mostly because sometimes a story needs to be told and you can't really put time on a story. And so we allow that to happen. And I think we've been getting all sorts of feedback about that, but my terms. So if you want to listen to it, go for it. But we live off of feedback. So if anyone does choose to listen, please, please, please update us, let us know, because I always say, like, I can only do this as long as people will want to listen. Right. So I'd like to keep doing it. So.
Well, and you could introduce people to the pause button. So I'm just,
yes, that's true.
You know, there is a pause button on all podcasts. Anyways.
Good point. I love that.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks so much for your time, and hey, good luck on the podcast, and hopefully someday we'll get to meet each other in person. Maybe all the Calgary podcasters need to get together.
There we go.
Yeah.
We
need one. Like, I think you guys should do something. Yeah.
Yeah.
thank you for, honestly, you guys can host. I'm impressed by your following. I'm impressed by your content. So I think you guys are doing a really lovely job in the space you're holding to share stories. So thank you, because there's, it took nothing to reach out and connect. And I'm really grateful for being part of this little community. So thank you for inviting me and letting me be part of it.
Awesome.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks so much for your time.
It's nice meeting you.
Have a good night.
Perfect.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us. If this episode or the podcast has been helpful to you in any way, it would mean so much to us if you would take just 30 seconds to do one or all of these three things. First, follow or subscribe to the Unpacked podcast. This helps you never miss an episode, and it goes right to your device. And it helps us so more people can find it too. To do this, head to the show page on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Then just look for the follow or the plus sign and click it. It's so important to us and it would mean so much. And hey, while you're there, if you'd be willing to give us a review, preferably 5-star, and share an episode with a friend that you found helpful, we would be so grateful. We are so, so grateful for this little online community. And if you're looking for more ways to support or exclusive content, you can head to our Patreon account and you can find that in the link in our bio. Again, thanks for listening.